protected from that blast were in this special emergency command center. Of course, the city government claims the entire building was evacuated at 9 in the morning, so nobody was inside this special reinforced bunker when the towers collapsed. This meant that the city spent $15 million to make this special reinforced bunker, and then everybody abandoned it just when it would have been useful. But did everybody really abandon Building 7? It would have been a great place for people to supervise the attack, because the 23rd floor provided a wonderful view of the area, and the occupants were protected from the dust and debris. To make the situation even more suspicious, as I explain in more detail in the book, the flight paths of the two airplanes that hit the towers appear to have been on a course towards Building 7, as if this building was broadcasting a homing signal. The towers were built by the government, so taxpayers owned both of them. However, somehow the government was convinced to lease the towers for 99 years. Larry Silverstein became landlord on July 24th, less than 2 months before the attack. He then had control of the maintenance and security departments, and he began to replace security personnel. Silverstein brought Frank Lowy into the deal to become landlord of the underground shopping mall. Lowy is a billionaire who owns shopping malls in several nations. After the towers disintegrated, Silverstein demanded insurance companies pay him twice what the policy stated on the grounds that each tower was a separate attack. What a coincidence that after these guys got control of the World Trade Center, Osama decided to destroy the entire complex. Joe Balbano, a researcher of the Kennedy assassination, points out that most people believe in coincidence theories, because they explain everything as being due to coincidence. For example, most people believe it was coincidence that all four hijacked airplanes were 80% empty. That Todd Beamer decided to spend his last 13 minutes of life talking on an airplane phone to a stranger rather than his pregnant wife. That fire pulverized three steel buildings, even though fire never did such a thing before or after. That terrorists hit the empty section of the Pentagon. How do coincidence theories make more sense than conspiracy theories? Some people consider my book to adequately explain that the September 11th attack was a scam. Not surprisingly, our government never found any evidence that the attack was a scam. Our government never even found a reason for why Building 7 collapsed. Parton and McKinney are examples. However, most Americans ignored or ridiculed both of them, while supporting these two rich kids as they pretended to be world leaders, and these guys as they used the attack as an excuse to bomb Afghanistan. The primary weapon in this war is deception, mainly through television, but also newspapers and magazines. Although you may ignore the National Review, these types of publications do have influence over the public. These journalists alter public opinion, and that in turn affects your life and your nation. It's easier for journalists to deceive people than it is for a military to conquer them. It ain't difficult to understand that the McVeigh bomb and 9/11 were scams. So how can people get away with such obvious scams? Because America is corrupt beyond your wildest dreams. There are lots of Americans willing to join these scams, and Bush's buddy is also. Americans often boast about our Bill of Rights and our freedom of speech, and they often ridicule the government-controlled media of communist nations. However, the American media is being used like a weapon to manipulate the public and keep them ignorant, often in obvious ways. The American people are being deceived, not educated or encouraged to discuss issues. Furthermore, neither the U.S. government nor the American people put pressure on the news reporters to stop this manipulation and provide intelligent articles. The only pressure news reporters feel is to provide news that is more entertaining than their competition. Hundreds of citizens have tried to help Americans realize that their nation has problems. But none of their books have done anything to improve the nation because most people refuse to consider that they might be correct. Only a small percentage of the population created America in 1776, and only a small number would be needed to change the nation today. The question I wonder about is, does America have enough respectable citizens to turn this nation into something we can be proud of?
Larry Silverstein, the controller of the destroyed World Trade Center complex, stated plainly in a PBS documentary that he and the New York Fire Department decided to jointly demolish World Trade Center 7 late in the afternoon of 9/11. This admission appeared in a PBS documentary originally aired in September of 2002, entitled America Rebuilds. Mr. Silverstein's comments came after FEMA and the Society of Civil Engineers conducted an extensive and costly investigation into the curious collapse of World Trade Center 7. The study specifically concluded that the building had collapsed as a result of the inferno within, sparked apparently by debris falling from the crumbling North Tower.
I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse. I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and then we watched the building collapse.
Pull is an industry term, which is short for pull down, meaning demolish. New questions about World Trade Center Building 7. Silverstein's startling admission of the demolition of Building 7 seems to explain some of the mysteries surrounding the third tower that fell that day, but many new questions arise. 1. Why didn't the building owner Larry Silverstein and FEMA communicate about how Building 7 fell during the long and expensive investigation? FEMA's report didn't even mention the possibility of the collapse being due to intentional demolition. 2. How is it possible that the perfect demolition of a 47-story skyscraper could have been done in the short time between when Silverstein was on the phone to the fire department and the collapse at 5:25 in the evening? Demolitions take months to design, engineer, and implement. Plus, the building was on fire. 3. Why was pulling down Building 7 the smart thing to do? Because of a terrible loss of life? The building was abandoned, so what lives? How about the lives of the hypothetical heroes that would have had to re-enter the abandoned building carrying high explosives to do months of work in a few hours while the fires that could not be contained were burning all around them? By the way, who are these guys? How come we haven't heard of them? Since the instant demolition scenario is essentially impossible, the only other plausible explanation is that demolition explosives had to have been installed and wired before 9/11. By admitting to the demolition, Silverstein also eliminates the possibility that terrorists could have planted the explosives. Together, these two points dispute the official story of 9/11, which is based on the assumption that the attacks were a complete surprise and done by Al-Qaeda. Narrated by hip-hop legend Paris and featuring interviews shot by GNN producers in six cities, Aftermath features nine people answering 11 of the most pressing questions that emanate from the terrible and as yet unexplained events of that day. As you will see, these are questions that continue to overshadow and critically challenge the official version of the story.
In the weeks leading up to the one-year anniversary of 9/11, GNN approached nine people who had dedicated themselves to investigating how and why the United States was attacked that September day. We asked them 11 questions. Unanswered question number 2, what did the Bush administration know and when? Mike Ruperts from The Wilderness was one of the first independent news sources to raise the issue of government foreknowledge.
First of all, it's imperative to note that the Bush administration is absolutely and totally lying when it says, golly gee, we had no idea that aircraft could have been used as weapons of mass destruction to attack the United States. We know, of course, that Bush had clear briefings that Al-Qaeda might be hijacking airplanes, but gee, the press forgot to tell you that on October the 24th through the 26th of 2000, the Pentagon held detailed drills practicing for an airliner being crashed into the Pentagon. The major media didn't tell you that at the G8 summit in Genoa, Italy in July of 2001, just 2 months before the attacks, all the airspace was closed off. The summit conference area was ringed with anti-aircraft guns, and the Los Angeles Times reported clearly that Egyptian intelligence and other intelligence services were afraid that hijacked aircraft would be crashed into the G8 summit to kill President Bush. It's a total lie that the administration had no knowledge. It's also a lie that the administration had no advance warning of the attacks. Intelligence reports from France, from Germany, from Russia, from Egypt, from Jordan, all of which taken together, show clearly that the United States government had been warned that in the week of September the 9th, commercial airliners would be hijacked and crashed into the World Trade Center, that those airliners would probably come from at least one airport in Boston, and that ultimately, through other warnings, that they would involve aircraft from American and United Airlines. Those are very specific warnings, and that's just what we know now to this day.
The FAA, NORAD, and the U.S. military have standard operating procedures that are routinely deployed during hijackings. Unanswered question number 3. Why wasn't the U.S. military able to intercept the hijacked planes? Nafiz Ahmed's book, The War on Freedom, is one of the most detailed investigations of 9/11.
Standard operating procedures dictate that as soon as a plane flies off course, the FAA will contact the plane and try to ask them what is going on. If there is a problem or if they cannot establish radio contact, then immediately the FAA will contact the Pentagon, who will, within a matter of minutes, a maximum of 10 minutes normally, will scramble fighter jets to intercept the civilian plane and to analyze the situation and see what is going on.
In his book, Nafiz documents a timeline of September 11th, showing how the attack should have been prevented, intercepted, or terminated. In the case of American Airlines Flight 77, which departed Dulles and was crashed into the Pentagon, the FAA lost contact at 8:50 a.m. However, fighters were not scrambled until 9:24 a.m., a delay of over 30 minutes.
Now, this sort of direct violation of standard operating procedures is inconceivable without some kind of high-level government approval. If we try to explain it by using the incompetence theory, it doesn't make sense. For example, if it was incompetent, we would expect that there would have been a normal inquiry into what went wrong. We would have expected that there would be some kind of reprimand, that certain officials would be downgraded, or they would lose their jobs, or something would have happened to correct the situation. But we find that there has been no such reprimand at all.
Unanswered question number 4. How did the administration respond to the failures of the military and intelligence agencies on 9/11? Despite the breakdown under his acting leadership on September 11th, General Richard B. Myers was promoted to chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest military post in the country. Unanswered question number 5. What ties, if any, did the U.S. government and intelligence agencies have with the terrorists or their supporters? Michel Soltadovsky's research at the Center for Research on Globalization has exposed links between the Bush administration and the terrorists.
The man who, according to the FBI, is considered to be the so-called money man behind the 9/11 terrorists, I'm talking about the head of Pakistan's military intelligence, Mohammed Ahmad.
In the aftermath of 9/11, the FBI confirmed that General Ahmed, then head of Pakistan's ISI, had authorized a $100,000 wire transfer to Mohammed Atta, the alleged ringleader of the terrorist hijackers.
Well, this same individual was on an official visit to Washington from the 4th to the 13th of September, and he met Colin Powell, Richard Armitage, George Tenet, his counterpart. He has links with the terrorists, he has links with the Bush administration. He's buddy-buddy with George Tenet, he's buddy-buddy with Mohammed Atta.
Unanswered question number 6. Were there plans for a war in Central Asia prior to September 11th?
This war was coming for a long time. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who had been Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, but who also worked in intelligence roles for Presidents Reagan and Bush 1, co-founder of the Trilateral Commission. He wrote a book in 1997 called The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Imperatives. And in three specific places in that book, he says, the key to America's control of the world in the 21st century is the control of Eurasia.
In support of his thesis, Brzezinski states, a power that dominates Eurasia would control two of the world's three most advanced and economically productive regions and about three-fourths of the world's known energy resources.
And then he says that without an attack on the order of Pearl Harbor or without a direct external threat, there was no way that the American people would support the imperial mobilization necessary to control Central Asia. And in this book, again, written in 1997, Brzezinski had a map of where the next world conflict was going to be. And you look at this map in the book, and it's exactly where we're fighting now.
Unanswered question number 7. Is there an underlying motive, besides the war on terror, for the U.S. military presence in Central Asia? Peter Dale Scott has written extensively about hidden agendas in U.S. foreign policy.
There are people in the administration who believe out and out that this is the American century, that it is the time for American hegemony. Both Republicans and Democrats have said we shouldn't worry so much about what our allies think.
Despite a lack of support from America's traditional allies, the Bush administration continues to pursue military action in Central Asia.
But it's, I think, pretty clear now to everybody that America has a oil geostrategy in that part of the world.
The U.S. National Energy Policy Report of 2001, authored by Vice President Dick Cheney, formerly one of America's richest and most powerful oil industry executives, demanded a priority on easing U.S. access to Persian Gulf oil supplies.
America needs to control the world oil system. And the fact that we have put U.S. troops in Georgia, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, even in Kyrgyzstan, 200 miles from the West Chinese border, all those troops there are nominally in the name of fighting the terrorists, but in reality, they have established an American presence in the great oil basin of the Caspian.
Unanswered question number 8. Is there any historical evidence to suggest that the government may have used the 9/11 attacks to justify its war in Central Asia? Alex Jones is a television and radio broadcaster who has publicly questioned the Bush administration's version of what happened on September 11th.
Governments always get caught engaging in terrorist attacks against their own populations to rally them for war or for a domestic crackdown. We saw William McKinley's Navy in the 1890s blowing up their own ship in Havana Harbor as a pretext for war with the Spanish government. And that's now admitted fact. We saw Adolf Hitler blow up his own Reichstag as a pretext for martial law. Firebomb their own capital. Nazi documents have been released, now part of historical records. Then, of course, we saw December 7th with the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor. It's now been released that 12 days before, they had Admiral Yamamoto's communique that the Japanese were going to be attacking Pearl Harbor. One of the best examples we have of the U.S. government planning terrorist attacks against its own institutions is the Northwoods document. This is a confirmed, admitted document, declassified just a few years ago.
In Body of Secrets, his best-selling expose of the National Security Agency, author James Bamford revealed that Operation Northwoods called for innocent people to be shot on American streets, for a wave of violent terrorism to be launched in Washington, D.C., and for a U.S. ship to be blown up in Guantanamo Bay, all in an effort to galvanize American public support for a war against Cuba.
And they say in the Northwoods document, casualty list in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of indignation. We certainly saw a helpful wave of indignation after September 11th.
Unanswered question number 9. How has the government's reaction to the terrorist attacks impacted the rule of law in the United States? John Judge is a member of the Washington Peace Center and has researched the post 9/11 effects on U.S. civil liberties. As of September the 11th, the entire country went into continuity of government, which is a special government that does not rely on the elected representatives, but in fact puts a small group of people in power. When you go into a declared war or a state of national emergency, which is what they went into on September 11th, legal authorities change. Hundreds of laws allow new power and new authorities for a select few people. Decisions are made not by the overt government, but by now an acknowledged shadow government. That's who's making these decisions, is DOD, FEMA, and the NSA. That's who's running the country since September 11th. In conclusion, we asked our interviewees, what are your final thoughts, and what can we do?
The run-up to September the 11th, the historical context in which it occurred, is a much darker, much deeper political and economic story that cannot be explained away by the trite and simplistic explanations given by the administration or the news media.
Is that the American people, separated from their own history, have no idea what has been done in their name all around the world in those intervening 50 years since the end of World War II.
Dissent has never been more critical for us to engage in with all of the energy and all of the commitment that we can muster. Because without these voices of dissent, we will not be the full society that we cherish. And the government is taking us on an illegal path. And it is our voices that must demand that they follow the Constitution and follow the law. When people say what we should be doing, people need to mobilize at the local level, at the grassroots level. There are now about 30 municipalities around the country that have passed resolutions to demand repeal of the Patriot Act. It's a very good thing for people to do. People are also negotiating at the local level with their local law enforcement that local law enforcement should not cooperate with federal law enforcement in terms of INS or the Department of Justice, the FBI. People need to encourage people to speak out, encourage their local governments to speak out.
As this system squeezes more and more people, as this system begins to dominate more and more people and displace more and more people, folks are going to be looking for answers. You need to be educated to be leaders in your area to give them those answers and how we can rebuild our society on decency and honor and the things that have really made societies work in the past. We've got to start honoring creativity, honoring individuality, and not this mass-marketed slave hell that they've created. Now is the time to fight this dehumanization. Now is the time to realize you're special, and you have power, and you can affect change, and that we're in a war for the very future of humanity. It's that important. And you're a soldier on the front line. So get out there and take it back to them, 110%. You don't have a choice, ladies and gentlemen. Run your own life, or somebody else is going to run it for you.
What happened to Flight 93? The U.S. government insists the plane exploded on impact, yet a one-ton section of the engine was found over a mile away, and other light debris was scattered over 8 miles away. There were at least 6 eyewitnesses who observed a mysterious military-style jet in the area. What's happened to our media? According to William Colby, the former director of the CIA, quote, "The Central Intelligence Agency owns everyone of any significance in the major media. The secret team, the real power structure, the most remarkable development in the management of Americans' relations with other countries during the quarter century since the end of World War II, has been the assumption of more and more control over military, financial, and diplomatic operations at home and abroad by men whose activities are secret, whose budget is secret, and whose very identities, often as not, are secret. In short, by a secret team whose actions only those implicated in them are in a position to monitor and to understand. The secret team is not a clandestine super planning board or super general staff. is a bewildering collection of semi-permanent or temporarily assembled action committees and networks. NORAD's war game, Vigilant Guardian. On the morning of September 11, 2001, Mr. Fulton and his team at the CIA were running a pre-planned simulation to explore the emergency response issues that would be created if a plane were to strike a building. Little did they know that the scenario would come true in a dramatic way that day. There have been numerous stories in various news sources, such as the BBC and the London Guardian, which indicate that at least 4 and as many as 8 of the alleged hijackers are still alive. Secrecy surrounds the 9/11 investigation. Some embarrassing Bush family connections. Marvin P. Bush, the president's younger brother, was a principal in a company called Securicom that provided security for the World Trade Center, United Airlines, and Dulles International Airport, all three of which were part of 9/11. Government cover-up of 9/11. Bush and Cheney resisted any investigation, then told Daschle to limit the investigation when they were pressured into having one by the victims' families. There has been a major government cover-up. Both the Senate Congressional Joint Inquiry and the Independent Commission were headed by people who should be investigated for their role in 9/11. Their stated parameters were not to find the truth, but to justify an expansion of the CIA and the national security state. Government investigations into 9/11. Taxpayers put out $65 million to investigate Bill Clinton's sex life and $30 million to investigate the Columbia shuttle disaster. Why did the Keene Commission initially receive a mere $3 million? Keene is barely better than Henry Kissinger, who had to step down because of his many direct conflicts of interest. Most of the rest of the committee members have their own conflicts of interest, most notably Commission Director Philip Zelikow, who served as the gatekeeper setting the agenda for the commission. According to Max Cleland, a former 9/11 commissioner, Americans are being scammed. Referring to the Bush administration's efforts to obstruct the 9/11 Commission's access to critical documents, former 9/11 Commissioner Max Cleland called them, quote, disgusting and a scam. Americans are being scammed, Cleland said on CNN's Newsnight. Max Cleland has since left the 9/11 Commission because he was appointed by Bush to be on the board of the Export-Import Bank. Whitewash. 9/11 director gave evidence to own inquiry. The panel set up to investigate why the United States failed to prevent the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001 was rocked Thursday by the bizarre revelation that two of its senior officials were so closely involved in the events they are investigating that they have had to be interviewed as part of the inquiry. The two officials are 9/11 Commission Director Philip Zelikow, who has connections to Bush, Cheney, and especially Rice, and Jamie S. Gorelick. Lori Van Auken, who lost her husband on 9/11, asks, did he interview himself about his own role in the failures that left us defenseless? This is bizarre. We entered a looking-glass world on September 11th, and we're still in it. Summary of White House cover-up. Then there's the stonewalling about 9/11. First, the administration tried, in defiance of all historical precedents, to prevent any independent inquiry. Then it tried to appoint Henry Kissinger, of all people, to head the investigative panel. Then it obstructed the commission, denying it access to crucial documents and testimony. Now, thanks to all the delays and impediments, the panel's head said it can't deliver the report by the original May 11th deadline, and the administration is trying to prevent a time extension. The PNAC, the Project for the New American Century, a Washington think tank founded in 1997 by a group of influential neoconservatives, or neocons. Most of these people are now major players in the Bush administration. Its stated goal is to promote American global leadership, which they define as full-spectrum dominance. In one 2000 paper entitled Rebuilding America's Defenses, PNAC authors wrote that, quote, the process of transformation requires some catastrophic and catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor. Hence the name of the book, The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11. From a skeptical vantage point, but also taking to heart the classic idea that those who benefit from a crime ought to at least be investigated, Griffin, an eminent philosopher and theologian, brings together an account of the national tragedy that is far more logical than the one we've been asked to believe. Inside Job by Jim Mars. The previously titled The War on Freedom was first released by the author. Jim Mars is known for his research and writings on the Kennedy assassination and many other topics. It was re-released in early July 2004 with a new title, Inside Job from Origin Press. 911truth.org is a newly formed umbrella organization with a great master website.
Planes hit in New York City, and thousands now are dead. It was Arab terrorists, this is what you said. Well, if that is the truth, then what have you got to hide? What were you doing on the day all those people died? Where were the fighter jets ordered by the FAA?
For 3 days in March of 2004, an unprecedented event brought forth an alternative vision of September 11th. A thousand activists gathered in San Francisco for phase one of a citizens 9/11 international inquiry. This was a culmination of a growing movement seeking to discover and reveal the facts and the truth about the events of September 11, 2001. The inquiry process will continue with phase two in Toronto at the end of May. The main hall for films and speakers was the historic Herbst Auditorium.
9/11 websites sprung up all over the place. And this amazing sort of conversation and cooperation began happening amongst researchers all over the world.
The films Aftermath and The Great Deception were screened, along with excerpts of Painful Deceptions, Arsenal of Hypocrisy, War and Globalization featuring Michelle Chudzidowski, Liberty Bound, and Guerrilla News Network's Flight 93 and Ammo for the Info Warrior. Along with film showings, a lengthy list of distinguished authorities and activists spoke. The speakers included Carol Brulé, Barry Zwicker, Mike Rupert, Paul Thompson, Ian Woods, Jim Mars, Ellen Mariani, and Phil Berg. Musician David Robus added his special energy to Friday evening.
See when you told the Air Force to stand down, not to intercept, did you plan to let it happen, or are you just inept?
These presenters spoke on a variety of topics, with the common theme of 9/11. Here are some highlights.
The purpose of 9/11 and encore 9/11 type events is to keep the public malleable through fear. A fearful public will countenance the reduction of its liberties in return for promises of greater security. More encores are expected. I hope this will be the subject of much discussion at this inquiry. If the 9/11 planners have been high-fiving over their success, they're engaging in hubris, taking credit where it is not due. Because those who conspired to concoct this toxic trick and inflict it did not succeed because they created a seamless magic trick. They succeeded only because of the virtual total complicity of the mainstream media, our mental jailers. It's from the mainstream media that most people get most of their information most of the time on most subjects. So those who control the output of the mainstream media control the brainstem of our collective consciousness. When those charged with being skeptical inquirers are neither skeptical nor do they inquire, the only phrase for it is deep complicity. As author and activist Arundhati Roy writes in the current issue of Global Outlook magazine, the magazine of our movement, quote, "It is important to understand the corporate media do not just support the neoliberal project. They are the neoliberal project. It is structural. It's intrinsic to the economics of the mass media." But there's another answer to the question. Where are we now and where are we going? I think that now we are actually on the threshold of hope, because such an edifice of illusion embedded in and promotive of an earth-destroying economy is one which cannot be sustained. Something has to give, and give soon. Something is stirring among the masses designated to sleepwalk toward oblivion. Something is stirring even among some of the prison guards, even among a few of the illusioneers. So where are we in the 9/11 skeptics movement? Well, I think our job is to know the landscape as well as we can, to grasp the largest picture to the best of our ability, to plan, as Michael Rupert says, a roadmap from where we are to a better place. Our job is to nourish realistic hope that we can and will, as 9/11 skeptics, play a pivotal role in helping the old death system to itself die the death it unconsciously seeks.
Our job is to prepare for the chaos to come and help lay the groundwork for the more honest and sane world that will be built upon the rubble and courage of the present. As 9/11 skeptics, we are called by history to be our best and most effective selves, whatever role we play. We are charged with doing our utmost to save our planetary home. So that's where I think we 9/11 skeptics are now. We are more awake than we ever have been. We have much more waking up to do, and especially we owe it to our fellow citizens to rub the sleep out of our eyes. Out of their eyes. That was 10 minutes exactly. Okay.
9/11, I think, obviously, since that is the underlying cause celebre of everything else that's going on, the Patriot Act, Homeland Security, the stripping of the Constitution, invasions of Afghanistan, Iraq, and future invasions of Iran, Saudi Arabia, who knows what, all of that goes back to 9/11. And if 9/11 was not on the level, then none of the preceding events are going to be on the level. So I think you have to start with the initial impetus.
Let us first address what I would like to call the 9/11 myth. It is, I submit, a fantastic construct. It is the story of the 19 hijackers, bin Laden, the laptop in the cave, and so forth. This myth has now become the basis of the government of the United States. The two are inextricably linked. And the survival of the myth is, of course, the key to the re-usurping campaign of the current tenant of the White House. And I would submit to you that the overriding political priority for every person of goodwill on this planet is to dismantle this myth, to critique it, to deconstruct it, and to put it into the dustbin of history. We've heard a lot of theories about why the official story of 9/11 does not hold water, and what I'm going to present to you is 26 of those. Flight 77 was able to fly uninterrupted for 1 hour and 45 minutes after detection. Was the Air Force on stand-down orders? No steel-structured building in the world has ever collapsed due to fire. The mysterious collapse of Building 7. World Trade Center Building 7 was not reported to be on fire until 3 p.m., and thanks to Eric Hofschmidt for his research on this. These fires were relatively small and appeared on floors 7 to 12. In less than 3 hours, the whole building came tumbling down into a vaporized cloud of dust at 5:25, even though no airplane had hit it and no debris had fallen on top of it. We do know that some of the 911 hijackers were imported and trained by the U.S. military. Well, it took 14 months for President Bush to set up a public inquiry into 9/11, the most significant terrorist attack in the history of the American nation. The Pearl Harbor Commission only took 9 days to be formed. The JFK Commission took 7 days. The Titanic Commission took 6 days. The Challenger Disaster Commission took 7 days. The entire Bush agenda, as we know and we've studied this weekend, is based entirely on the myth of 9/11. If the official story is found to be illegitimate, Bush and company could find themselves behind bars. Yeah. There is a force more powerful, and it is us, we the people. Together, we can break the consensus.
Their corruption is so outrageous that it won't last forever. And people see the corruption, and that's one reason why we're here. And how are we going to get rid of this corruption? My personal thing is I think it's going to take nonviolence, peaceful demonstration, because there are way more of us than there are of them. And we can take back our republic with pots and pans. And like he says there, he says, when I despair, I remember that all through history, the way of truth and love has always won. There have been tyrants and murderers, and for a time, they can seem invincible. But in the end, they always fall. Think on it. Always.
9/11 was not a failure of low-level bureaucrats, but an executive-level stand-down. On September 11th, while four planes were hijacked and two crashed into the Twin Towers, while people were burning and jumping out of buildings, G.W. Bush, Commander-in-Chief, was in a second-grade classroom in Sarasota, Florida, reading about a pet goat. To date, the administration has presented no evidence that it was bin Laden, and Al-Qaeda. Remember, they couldn't trust us with that information before they rushed in to destroy Afghanistan again. No tapes, nothing but an alleged hijacker's passport, which miraculously survived the rubble of the World Trade Center. The 9/11 Commission is officially called the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks Upon the United States. The Bush administration had already written the plot line, and these 10 independent commissioners are merely reading the script. It looks like Karl Rove called Central Casting and found Washington insiders with so many conflicts of interest, so much to lose in their high-powered jobs, they are guaranteed to play their role and keep the truth under wraps. Max Cleland said of the 9/11 Commission that its deal with the White House about seeing its presidential briefings is a sham, it's disgusting, and America is being cheated. Kyle Hens, co-founder of Citizens Watch, which monitors the commission, has called the commission spineless and operating under a dark veil of secrecy and denial. I simply call it the cover-up commission. Like the Warren Commission, the 9/11 Commission is turning up some information that can help us piece together the real story, so it cannot be dismissed out of hand. But the real benefit I see of the commission is that it may be accumulating quite a record of those who may have misled or lied to the commission. Remember, cover-up is another name for obstruction of justice. Perhaps the international inquiry, which we're forming, might consider adding some of these commissioners to those involved in the cover-up. Truth is the only way to healing and peace.
The idea that the World Trade Center collapsed, the leveling of the Twin Towers in Building 7, resulted from jetliners impacting the towers is the core of the big lie of 9/11/01. While the tower collisions, the Pentagon assault, and the crash of Flight 93 were horrific, deadly events, it was the total destruction of the towers over an hour after they were hit by the airplanes, in the case of the North Tower, that killed by far the most people. The repeated airing of the photogenic South Tower collision and immediate historical revisionism conflating the collisions with the collapses concealed the fact that the explosive disintegrations of the towers were the heart of the psychological assault on the populace. The shocking explosions of the signature towers were the key psychological underpinning of the war on terror. Despite the non-sequitur of steel-frame buildings converting themselves into dust and shredded steel, the jetliner hits tower, tower falls down meme proved difficult to pierce. I found the collapse of Building 7 an effective antidote to the conditioning surrounding the collapses of the Twin Towers. Therefore, I will first present a brief segment on Building 7, then proceed to examine the collapse of the Twin Towers. I would like to not only talk about Pakistan's role in the plot, but also what that tells us about the role of the U.S. government potentially in the plot in 9/11. In the early 1990s, the ISI created the Taliban in Afghanistan pretty much from scratch. The Taliban didn't exist. They gave them money, weapons, everything, sort of pushed them over the border, and they put them into power after a tremendous amount of support behind them. And it's pretty much accepted by all the mainstream media that the Taliban were the complete puppets of the ISI. Either that the U.S. was directly involved with Pakistan and these other countries in the 9/11 plot and allowed it to happen or helped make it happen, or the U.S. government was completely taken for fools, and then afterwards they covered up their foolishness and have actually, instead of punished these countries and these actors, they've actually rewarded them. And I would argue that personally I favor the first, but I would argue that in either case, this is really treasonous behavior to deceive the American people in this way, to let the true perpetrators of 9/11 go free, and in either case, it should lead to impeachment of President Bush. Thank you very much.
Many people wonder about how such a quote-unquote conspiracy could be carried out. They say, oh, thousands of people would have had to know. The answer is no. I have studied a great many covert operations. I have interviewed a great many covert operatives. And the fact is, you don't need a whole lot of people to know. You need key people in key places. For the first reason, that there's something called compartmentalization, where you only have a person in one room working on a bolt, a person in another room working on a nut, a person in another room working on a screw, and nobody knows what the finished product looks like. That's metaphors for covert operations. But also, you only need a few people in key places. And here's another quote that from the Associated Press on August 13th. Fighter jets scrambled 67 times properly in the calendar year prior to 9/11. So So we know from these events right now that at this point that at between 8:13 and 8:14 a.m. in the morning, if we have confirmation, according to what the FAA would know, that Flight 11 had been hijacked. Period. There is no question. At that point, immediately, the scramble order should have been issued. Over here at 8:46, three F-16s assigned to Andrew Air Force Base are flying air-to-ground strike training mission 200 miles from Washington. Instead of being ordered to D.C. at supersonic speeds, they return to base, slowly landing only after Flight 77 hits the Pentagon. They could have been in D.C. airspace within 10 minutes. Flight 93 was shot down. You cannot have a 5-mile or 4 or 5-mile debris trail. I think the port engine was something like 2.5 miles from the impact site. These multi-ton engines don't bounce 2.5 miles. Multiple witnesses confirm a missile strike on the aircraft, and there were some very strange military planes around that. So when you get to the bottom of all this, nobody did what they were supposed to be doing, and it shows very clear criminally negligent at best behavior. I think you have a clear case for conspiracy here. My plea to all 9/11 activists is that we have to find the sheet music so that we can all sing the same notes. I would submit to you that if I could make this case to you in 20 minutes, we can make the same case to the American people in 20 minutes, and if we keep it simple, we might be able to crack the nut that we need to crack, that we must crack, to save our country, to save our planet, and our civilization. So ultimately, what I have to say to you is that as I look at this, and as I've studied this, and as I've worked 26 years to unravel this covert mechanism that governs our lives, I'm firmly convinced that what we are now faced with is a choice offered to us by our Creator. Either evolve or perish. Thank you.
Give me a lever long enough and a place to stand, and I will move the world. And I take that as a metaphor, and for me, 9/11 is the longest lever, the greatest opportunity of our time. As John Buchanan, Republican candidate for president on a 9/11 truth ticket, has said, it's the mother of all issues. And I believe the truth of 9/11 will change our world more than any other single issue. That the official story is a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy, two or more people. The official story is just a theory. It has never been proven. There has never been any kind of trial. Very little additional evidence has been added to the nearly immediate conclusions that were drawn within hours or a few days of 9/11. And any and all investigations that were for many months non-existent were and are being resisted, underfunded, ignored, stonewalled, and limited. So the official story is a conspiracy theory. So it's not a question of whether or not you believe in conspiracy theory or that 9/11 was a conspiracy. It's a question of which conspiracy theory you believe in. We're talking about an evolution and an awakening. 9/11 is part of a much bigger evolutionary spiritual awakening happening and accelerating throughout humanity. In part, we are currently doing some collective shadow work, exposing this darkness to the light. Shadow, as you know, the part of us within ourselves that is not so pretty and that we don't want to show and talk about, but we're aware it exists and other people tell us about it. That same thing happens on a collective level, and we in fact call it the shadow government. And this needs to be exposed to the light if we're going to create the kind of world that we came here to create. So besides moving towards greater truth, we are challenged to move towards greater love and more healing, more forgiveness, and more wisdom. We are enough, and we will succeed. Thank you.
Just prior to the opening of the inquiry, a presentation room upstairs was the site of a groundbreaking news conference, where many of the weekend's presenters gave brief summaries of their upcoming presentations.
This independent commission that was initially supposed to be headed by Henry Kissinger, and now headed by Thomas Kean, is failing to ask the proper questions about 9/11.
This is one of countless advance warnings that we have received reports about that are not being investigated by this commission.
It's an absolute disgrace, the fact that we have to get together to prod to find out the answers. We are now 2 1/3 years later, after 9/11. Not one person has been prosecuted. Not one military person has been even accused or been brought up for court-martial. I think one of the biggest problems, when you say, why isn't the media covering this? The hard part is that the American citizens don't want to believe that our government would do something like this.
That every plane which deviates from its flight path and radio contact is not established with that plane, or there's a hijacking confirmed, military jets must be scrambled to intercept that plane to find out what was going on immediately. And if you look at the past record, which is documented in official reports of responses, U.S. responses to previous hijackings and other such incidents, there is absolutely nothing like this that has happened before in the history of the United States. It's absolutely unprecedented. What happened on 9/11 was a violation of standard procedures.
9/11 was an international event. You know, it's literally not true that, quote, 3,000 Americans died that day, unquote. It's not a competition about victimhood, but people from 84 countries died that day, including 26 from Canada. So this is why we've linked together, we in Toronto, who are holding an international, and we're adding the word citizens now, inquiry into 9/11. We have linked hands across the border, harmony and complementarity with San Francisco here. It makes it less likely they can call us anti-American up there, by the way.
We are here today to tell the rest of the world that no matter what the major media does, no matter what the government does, no matter what the financial interests governing this planet do, at this moment in time, we will not let 9/11 go. Thank you.
The rest of the weekend, the press conference room was both the location of 9/11 film showings and of additional speakers. An adjoining room hosted lively follow-up discussions with the Herbst presenters. The tabling room enabled participants to sample and purchase the many books, videos, magazines, buttons, and other materials, and to interact one-on-one with the presenters.
You get above
who's behind the scenes. In other
words, volunteers, participants, and organizers created a video production studio on location. At the close of each day, panels of presenters were convened for further discussions for the cameras.
My name is Blaine Mahan, and I'm here this evening to discuss one of the aspects of the September 11th truth movement, a creation called the Deception Dollar. I'm the artist that originally came up with the concept for the Deception Dollar.
During the inquiry, a march was organized to the mayor's office at San Francisco's City Hall.
We have an idea right now for what we'd like to do, and anyone who wants to participate can do so. It's a fun family activity. We have prepared a letter to Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, which we would like to deliver today. We're just going to walk up, I would say, in a solemn procession. It can be colorful, certainly. Up to the door. We're going to cross the street at the intersection properly and deliver it by hand to whoever is minding the store today. And this letter, should we read the letter?
Dear Mayor Newsom, according to a report in the San Francisco Chronicle on September 12, 2001, your predecessor in office, Willie Brown, stated that on the evening of September 10th, he received a call from a source he described as his security people at the airport, advising him not to take a scheduled flight to New York City the next morning. Willie Brown got low-key early warning about air travel, SF Chronicle, September 12, 2001. We're concerned that this evidence may lead back to persons who had advanced knowledge of the September 11th attacks on New York and Washington. We request that you investigate whether Mayor Brown's source is known to San Francisco or Bay Area authorities, and that you take up contact with your predecessor to clarify the matter. Please note that the many indications that specific advanced warnings and prior knowledge of September 11th attacks circulated among certain groups, including two Newsweek stories that top officials at the Pentagon canceled travel plans for September 11th on the evening of September 10th, and reports of stock trading in put options on American Airlines and United Airlines, and other insider trading indicating advanced knowledge in the week prior to September 11th on international stock exchanges, including in San Francisco, for one listing, and then we give the URL. We await a response. That's
care of our contact.
Right. So it's conveniently located just across the street. So if you have 5 minutes and you'd like to join us, we would welcome your company.
Demanding these answers for the families as well as for the rest of the country who's been asked to send their sons and daughters to war and give up their civil liberties based on 9/11, the most horrendous yet least examined event in modern American history. It's time for the truth. We're sick of the lies, we're sick of the cover-up, and it's time that we got what we deserve, which is truth. Thank you.
Please walk with me. Please march with us silently. Hopefully in Washington, we can get all the families to show the world what they've done to us for generations. I was on a plane 2 hours before my husband, who kissed me 3 times goodbye. I left as a married woman and came home as a widow. I have to do it. They can't speak. They are no more. So please walk with us. I am from the state of New Hampshire. We were on our way to my daughter's wedding. He never made it. So I'm here today for all the 3,000 who were killed. I am ashamed of our government and what they've done. They have lied. They will do anything to obstruct our justice. I waited 2.5 years for justice. It hasn't come forward. I can't do it alone, and it's people like you that are walking with me for your future, your grandchildren and your children and whomever else is here in our country.
I'm very honored to be able to represent Ellen Mariani. I'm representing her on behalf of herself to seeking the truth for her late husband and for the other 3,000 people who were murdered on that day, and also all of you and everyone across the United States and around the world. Because what occurred on that day was terrorism. We have to figure out who did it, why it happened, and make sure it never happens again. George W. Bush, the Bush administration, was involved in the events of 9/11, and they must be held accountable.
During the final hours of Sunday afternoon, key participants presented the inquiry's findings and a call to action. Finally, the organizers of the Phase 2 inquiry in Toronto set the course for our immediate future this May in Canada.
Thank you for being here.
As the flames are rising higher, what's inside you?